The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
Hello and welcome to the Paul Spiteri Show here on Sports Talk 1240. It is July 10th, 9 o'clock. Thank you for attending for my first show. First, before I get started, I want to thank Mr. Rob Cole for giving me this opportunity. Got to meet Rob a couple of weeks ago. He's a great guy, fun to text and tweet with, and I look forward to joining his family here on Sports Talk 1240. And how about Jake and Dan in front of me? What a great job those two guys did. I mean, I felt like I was listening to pros. Excellent job talking about the Yankees, the Mets, the Knicks, and all kinds of sports stuff. Really, really good stuff. And I want to thank Brian for engineering my program tonight. Gave me some good tips before I got started. And for everybody out there, let's mention the call-in number, 631-888-8811. So this is my first show, and looking to have some fun tonight. The format of the show today really do two things. I talk a bit about New York sports, kind of go through Mets, Yankees, Giants, Jets, Knicks, Nets, Rangers, Islanders, and then around 9:35, I'm going to bring on a friend of mine who I met at the Mets fantasy camp a couple of years ago, Turk Wendell. Many of you know, pitched for the Mets, Phillies, and Cubs. Really great guy. I got to know Turk pretty well, kept in touch since the camp. Really insightful, fun guy to talk to. He'll be coming on around 9:35. Going to talk some baseball with Turk, see how he's doing, and have some fun with Turk. So the format, kind of the show that I'm looking to do here and in a couple more in August, is really talk New York sports. I'm obviously a big fan, been a New Yorker my whole life. One New York team, one sport, I'd not root for New York, and you'll get to see that, and maybe you guys can figure it out as my show goes on. But we'll talk a bit about all the New York sports, talk some fantasy sports over time, especially with football coming up, to a couple of shows in August. And hopefully we have a little edge to the show. You know, I like to have a little fun. I'm not going to quote a ton of stats, but I want to talk about players, teams, trends, who I like, don't like. And we'll see if get some calls in. And if you guys like what I say, great. If you don't, let me hear from you. Again, 631-888-8811. And before I get started with the show, I just want to thank my sponsor for all your transportation needs. Call CJA Luxury Transportation. Airports, trips into the city, trips to wineries, all luxury vehicles at taxicab prices. Craig's a great guy, runs the business, reliable. I know the guy a long time. All of my business trips go through him, all of my company's business trips. Call Craig, 516-557-7991. Again, 516-557-7991, CGA Luxury Transportation. So let's get started, talk about baseball, right? We're in the middle of July, probably the best thing to do. Let's talk about the Mets. And I just want to tell you one thing to see what Terry Collins might be saying every day.
Are they all dead?
Yes, ma'am.
I mean, listen, I don't know who could coach a team with the injuries that they have as well as Terry Collins has. But before we even get to that, first thing I want to talk about is Daniel Murphy. Please tell me how the Mets did not walk this guy several times. I mean, he brought to the World Series last year single-handedly, and he absolutely has torched them the entire season, and yet they're still pitching to this guy. It's absolutely amazing to me that they can't figure out how to walk this guy. But when you look at the Mets, I think this is a playoff team one way or the other, right? I mean, clearly, you know, when you look at the injuries, obviously the Harvey loss is bad. I don't care how bad he was pitching. That is a huge loss for this baseball team, right? And it hurts your depth. He was the best pitcher they had in the playoffs last year. You know, obviously he was pitching hurt. Tough loss. And listen, I just hope this guy comes back and has a career. Somebody the other day mentioned his name and Sean Markham in the same sentence, which is absolutely scary because I've played a lot of fantasy baseball in my life and looked how bad Sean Markham was. And, God, I sure hope Harvey doesn't turn to Sean Markham. Listen, and if Thor is hurt, Syndergaard's down, they're done. I mean, season's over. You don't lose those two type of pitchers and expect to contend. I mean, it just doesn't matter. You're done. If Syndergaard's hurt, and I got to tell you guys, it just starts to smell as going five innings here, five innings there. I mean, there's something wrong. And, you know, I think when you look at pitching in general, you know, it's really hard when you see the money that these guys are asking for and the risks that they run. I mean, it really is amazing how many great pitchers have just consistently get hurt. And obviously there's a trend there. I'm no doctor or anything, but clearly it's something that, you know, when you're a GM and you're facing a guy like Scott Boras on the other side and he's trying to convince you to pay these guys $225 million and their arms go down as much as they do, it's got to be tough. But when you look at the Mets, I don't see any big deals. I think that they got some talent in the minor leagues. But, you know, I think Sandy's a smart guy. And I don't think he's going to clearly look to empty out what he's got left. He's got some good prospects coming up still. But this team, it's all about health, right? I mean, listen, they lost their catcher, their first baseman, their third baseman throughout the year. Right? Darnell just came back. He's starting to hit, right? Duda's been gone. And, you know, that James Loney, who I was never a big fan of, has come up and is hitting the ball pretty well. But listen, let's not count on James Loney, right? This guy, when you look at his stats, they'll be the same thing he does every year. If he hits more than 12 home runs, it would be a miracle. This guy's not a big power hitter. He's a solid ball player. That's it. You know, at third base, listen, I think when you get Reyes and people are, oh, Wilmer Flores, you know, why isn't he in it? We got to let him play. Listen, Wilmer Flores has had many opportunities, right? Every time I look at his average, it's no more than 260, right? So maybe now that he's got, you know, something up his butt, like Jose Reyes, he's starting to play good. I'm glad he went for six the other night. But here's a guy that has had a lot of opportunity and hasn't come through. Now he's starting to hit. That's great. And listen, when you have the amount of injuries that this team has, it is good to get bodies. Reyes is coming in. He's hit the ball pretty well. He gives some energy. I think it's great to have him. And if it's gotten him going and it's got Flores going, good. You need depth, period. Listen, don't forget Michael Conforto. All right, Michael Conforto, I mean, listen, we were talking about this guy as an all-star candidate in April and May. Right now we're saying he's going to sit in Las Vegas for 2 years. I mean, listen, he'll be back. Right, he'll add depth. I mean, listen, Alejandro Diaz should be playing for the Ducks. He has no right playing at Citi Field. You know, I'll probably see him at Bethpage Park with my kids in a couple of weeks. Right, so hopefully we get Conforto back. Let's not forget him. Obviously, listen, Yoenis Cespedes, if he's out, that's a huge problem too. I mean, listen, expert in any baseball circle, if they lose Cespedes for any period of time and they lose Syndergaard and Harvey, it's done. There's only so much you can do. You know, and I'm a big Terry Collins fan. I think managers in general, listen, you know, in baseball, you fill out a lineup. If you give me Clayton Kershaw 35 times, here's a good chance I'm going to win you 20 games as a manager. You know, he's a good guy to have. I think he's the right personality for that team, and he's going to do the best that he can with what he has. And you know, when it comes to pitching now, if Syndergaard's healthy, you got him, you have DeGrom, you have Max. Listen, those three guys can win any playoff series. Right, there's no doubt about it. If one of those guys goes down and you're throwing Bartolo Colon out there in game three of a playoff series, I'm sorry, you know, he's 43 years old. He'll probably be 86 by the time the playoffs start. I'm not going to sit here and say, well, I feel good about Bartolo Colon going in game three of a playoff series. You need those three guys, and I'll be happy if Bartolo Colon throwing in the fourth game of a playoff series. Yeah, and then you got Wheeler, right? So Wheeler's another guy we were talking about. Wheeler comes back by August. That's great. But listen, he's going to come back. He hasn't pitched in a year and a half. Let's not expect too much. You got to set the bar with these guys. Oh, you need his body right now in his arm, right? Whether it's, you know, pitching every fifth day and then the playoffs becomes a long man. We just need bodies, right? But I think people are thinking Zach Wheeler's going to come back and dominate. I think Zach Wheeler will be much better come next year. And when you look at the National League, listen, the Nationals are, you know, they obviously got the division by six games. I think they have holes, but at the end of the day, you know, they've been healthier than the Mets, right? And you know, even this weekend, you know, watching some of the games, and, you know, Daniel Murphy's the one hitter on that team beside the catcher. I mean, Harper is, you know, he's a good, obviously a great baseball player, but, you know, they figured him out a bit. They're getting this kid out. So why do we keep pitching to Murphy? I mean, Jason Worth comes in, a guy that's like Chewbacca. Why can't we get this guy out? I mean, I was just amazed at how much they're throwing the ball to Murphy, especially after what they witnessed last year, what they're witnessing this year. But when you look at the National League, you really got a couple of teams that are in the playoff run, right? You got teams that are done. Phillies, Braves, Brewers, Reds, Rockies, Padres, done. Diamondbacks, gone. So who does that leave? That leaves you with the Nationals, probably win the division, right, unless the Mets get hot and get healthy. The Marlins are going to hang around there. I love Don Mattingly as a manager. I think they have a great offense. They have no pitching. Right? When you look at Marlins pitching outside of Jose Fernandez, there's nothing there, right? So the Mets, at the end of the day, if their pitching can stay healthy, they should beat out the Marlins. Then you look over at the Central. Cubs, good baseball team. But what do the Mets just do to them? Simply, the Mets can pitch. The Cubs' pitching stinks. They have Jake Arrieta, who, by the way, has been pitching terrible lately. The rest of their staff is not that good. None of those guys in a playoff game are going to scare you, right? Lester, I like Lester. He's a very good pitcher. Lester, Arrieta, they're good, but they're both beatable. And they both, especially Lester, who breaks down consistently in the second half. Pirates, a lot of holes in, on their pitching staff. Cardinals, good team, always a good team, but clearly they had their injuries as well. They got the Giants, who are very good and have a great pitching staff, probably the best coach team in baseball. And then you have the Dodgers, who are always dangerous. But if Kershaw doesn't come back, you can forget them. So the Mets, at the end of the day, still have a chance, but they have to stay healthy. And can they win the National League with DeGrom, Syndergaard, and Mats? Yes, they can beat any of these teams in a series with those three guys because they'll pitch six of the seven games. If it goes that far, I'd love their chances. Right? Absolutely. I think the Mets have a chance. So let's go over to the other side of town and let's talk about the Bronx. And there's something that... something that I think we should hear about the Yankees.
Get back in there at once and sell, sell.
Yes, Mortimer, sell, sell. Listen, Yankee fans, I know you're proud. I know you love your team. But wouldn't you rather be the Astros or the Marlins, the Yankees right now, when you look at those rosters? I mean, listen, this team is not winning anything anytime soon. It's time to sell, rebuild, be a little patient, and then you can be a perennial contender. Rather than go out and try to do the things you've done historically and put an outfield of Beltran, Ellsbury, and Gardner out there, which aren't going to win you anything, right? I think at the end of the day, the outlook for the Yankees is bleak, and for the next few years is going to be bleak when you look at the pitching staff. I mean, there's who on this team scares you? All right, let's go and face Tanaka, Pineda, Eovaldi, Severino when he comes back, Sabathia, Ivan Nova. I mean, guys, you're not going to win anything with that team. It's time to rebuild. Carlos Beltran always plays like this when a contract is up. I personally think the guy's a Hall of Fame baseball player. I think the Yankees need to rebuild. But we have a caller. Dan from New Jersey, you're on with Paul on Sports Talk 1240. Dan, what do you got?
What, are you nervous? You sound nervous.
First time, long time.
First time, long time. All right, let's go, first off.
What's going on, the King? Talk to me.
Let's talk. Yankees, they don't sell.
They don't stick. Even your dog's barking. Your dog doesn't even agree with you.
That's Peaches, you know.
Yeah, I know.
She's nervous. So you think the Yankees should sell? The Yankees don't sell. They reload.
Yeah, but what are you going to reload? Look at this team. I mean, look at this. Here's the depth. McCann, Teixeira, Castro, Headley, Gregorius. That's your infield.
George's kids aren't as interested as the father was in winning. He's got to go out and spend some dough like the old man used.
So you think this team should reload and try to make the playoffs this year?
I don't know about this year, but I wouldn't go trade in Miller. I would try to sign Chapman and then sign some guys over the winter for next year.
Well, that's contrary. I was going to say the opposite. I think, obviously, I would move Headley, Castro, Beltran, and I would actually move Tanaka.
Well, he might be hurt. I don't know what you can get for him. But Mets, still on my Mets, all right? I don't feel it this year.
Why?
The injuries. I think they got too many injuries.
Well, I mean, it's a huge problem. You can't do anything about injuries. But I do think if Syndergaard's not hurt, I think that they can contend.
Just worried. I look at the lineup, not imposing, right? You either get home runs or you get strikeouts. They don't string together big innings. And I just worry now with Harvey down, if Syndergaard's hurt for any amount of time, that they're going to hit the bottom.
Well, listen, I think that they're still a good baseball team. I think the National League is winnable. I do think that, yeah, it worries me with the amount of injuries. I mean, clearly this team has got a lot of problems with injuries. You know, like I said, I'm not a big fan of Loney at first. I think Duda coming back will be nice if he can hit. I think third base is a little bit better with Flores and Reyes kind of sitting out there. But I still think you can't write off Conforto. I think there's enough there for this team. I like Familia. I like Addison Reed in the bullpen. I don't think it'd be a bad idea to get another arm in the bullpen, quite honestly.
I agree. And I love Familia.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Blue Shirts.
Oh, I didn't get there yet. But listen, before you talk about the Blue Shirts, let me tell you a stat that I figured out this weekend.
Okay.
So I looked at the salary cap for the NHL, right? It's like $73 million.
Right.
52% of the New York Rangers salary cap sits with the following five hockey players. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Rick Nash.
Mm-hmm.
Derek Stepan.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Stahl. I can't get Eric Stahl in that nightmare out of my mind. Dan Girardi.
And the King.
And the King. So that's $38 million. And you tell me right now, your heart of hearts, if you got a good offer for any of those five, wouldn't you deal them?
Definitely deal Nash. I would definitely – listen, they couldn't find a buyer for Girardi at his salary. They could have probably traded him for a couple of picks in minor leaguers or something. No one wanted him, right?
Yeah, he's $6
million. I know. Saul, definitely. And you know how I feel about the goalie's the tough one for me.
Well, can I tell you, let me give you another stat.
But I probably would move him at this point because I don't think they can win right now.
The goalie for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Remember that kid who won the cup, Matt Murray?
Yeah.
You know how much money he made this year?
Not a lot.
$658,000, and they won a Stanley Cup with this guy. Listen, in this day and age of the NHL, you don't need to pay your goalie close to $10 million. It's absolutely too much money.
Agreed. And the Rangers don't have Crosby or Malkin.
No.
And that's what hurts them.
I mean, listen, you're a Ranger fan, I'm a Ranger fan, right? When they went for the cup the last 3 years, right, getting St. Louis, listen, I'm not going to – just like in 1994, I said to one of my cousins, a huge Ranger fan, I said, if they never win again, I'll be happy just to see it once. Clearly you want to see it again. But I was more than happy going for St. Louis and then going for Yandle. And listen, at the end of the day, they're a good hockey team. They won a lot of games. But they were just not better than the teams. The Devils they should have beat 3 years ago in that conference. I think the Devils were that good. The Kings were better than them, and the Lightning were better than them last year.
Kings definitely. Too big, too strong. Lightning were a little quicker, but game one, early in the series, they got down, and then they tried to fight back, and they just couldn't get back over the hump.
Uh-huh. All right, well, listen.
Let's talk. Wait, what, are you going to hang up on me?
Well, no. I want to see if we're going to switch to football yet.
I mean, what do you got? You got the first play of the year. You guys get the kickoff, right?
Who's you got? Are you talking about the Denver Broncos?
Yeah, September 8th, right? Thursday night football, Panthers, first play. I heard that your coach, what's his name? I forgot his name. Coach.
Gary Kubiak.
First play of the year, he told Sanchez to run the butt fumble. Is there any truth to that?
Well, listen, I think it's important for you to state what allegiance you have in the NFL to the Oakland Raiders. And I think that when you look at the Denver Broncos, you're still talking about defense. And the defense is still very good. And the defense will still win them a lot of football games.
Remember, what's the steakhouse in New York City? Del Frisco's. Right?
Listen, I want to talk to you about the Giants and Jets for a second.
Okay, I'm on.
All right. I like the Giants. I think they're a good football team. Let's start with Odell. Odell is a beast of a football player. Probably the best football player in New York. I think one of the most dynamic football players in the NFL. The offense has components with him and Eli. However, I think at running back, there's a lot of mediocrity there.
Which, if you look around the league, there's a lot of teams who have just a couple of guys filling that spot. And they're hoping for the best to come out of those three or four guys, right? The other thing with the Giants on offense is one side of their line is very suspect.
Yeah, I think the old line is okay. It's got holes. And I think the quarterback doesn't move much, but he knows how to get rid of the ball. I also think that receiver's an issue. I think, listen, they drafted the Kid Shepherd from Oklahoma. Yeah, everyone loves college wide receivers. I'm not a huge fan of college wide receivers making tremendous impacts. I mean, obviously, Cooper did last year. He's a great player. But, more often than not, rookie wide receivers don't make a huge impact. And what else do they have? And Victor Cruz, he's a great story, a good guy. I'd love to see him dance in the end zone a couple of times. But I think that they're a little thin.
Their biggest issue is going to be on the other side of the ball. If they don't get the quarterback down, they can give up points. They're going to have to sack the quarterback.
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about defense, right? I mean, it's Vernon and JPP need to apply pressure. I don't think the linebackers, right, looking at that depth chart online at the linebackers, Keenan Robinson, Devon Kennard, JT Thomas. I mean, I know Keenan Robinson a little bit, but these aren't great guys. So the linebackers aren't getting to the quarterback. So if Vernon and JPP don't, then, no matter how good Jenkins and DRC is and the Landon Collins and Apple out there, if they can't get to the quarterback, they're going to have problems.
I agree. And I know you're calling doom for the other team this year.
Well, listen, I think the Jets are going nowhere. And listen, at the end of the day, I think it's very simple. And listen, I kind of feel bad for the Jets in a way, right? Look at this schedule. Let me just take you through the schedule, right? When you look at this first six games, I think someone at the Jets really upset someone at the NFL to get handed with, listen to this, Cincinnati at home. That could go either way. I mean, Cincinnati, I'm not a huge fan of that team, but they can easily beat the Jets that game, and they can easily lose it. Then you go Thursday night at Buffalo. Loss. At Kansas City. Tough place to play. Home for Seattle. And then you go at Pittsburgh, at Arizona. I mean, Jet fans could be pumpkin picking by the middle of October, Dan.
Yeah, you mentioned the Patriots.
Well, they didn't get to them yet. I mean, then you got Baltimore, Cleveland. And then they got Miami, the Rams, and a bye, and then the Pats, Colts, Niners, Dolphins, Pats, Bills. I mean, this team might be 6-10.
They actually got unlucky, too. They don't play the Pats when Brady suspended, when you think about it, right?
Yeah, they got the Pats at the end. I mean, listen, I just don't think and the other thing is, I love how much attention Ryan Fitzpatrick gets. Did you ever look at his career average, his career one loss? It's like 32-50.
Pedestrian.
Terrible. And yet, this is what the Jet fans are clamoring for. Listen, I think that they have some talent, but they are no way a playoff team.
They got a lot of weapons. There's a team with a right quarterback, with Forte coming over. He's still got some juice, and Decker, and Brandon Marshall.
Yeah. How about tight end? When's the last time Jets had a tight end that you even heard of? Give me the last good Jet tight end.
Richie Caster?
Maybe. Maybe. And on defense, listen, this Wilkerson thing is not going to play out well.
Oh, I'd love to see him with the silver and black.
Well, you have to see him. He's gone. There's no way he's signing with the Jets. And then on defense, you know, I still think the linebackers, you know, Harris is a good player. The kid they drafted out of Ohio State can play small and fast, can tackle people. And then you got the secondary with, you know, Revis is still a great football player, headed to Canton one day, but definitely on the wrong side of his career. And then, yeah, I don't think that they're that good of a team. I think it's going to be a long season. If Fitzpatrick signs, they're still not going to be great. If he doesn't sign and you got Geno or you're throwing Hackenberg out there, Jet fans, you better hope that the season just tanks and you get the top five pick in the draft next year. That's what it comes down to. Because in the division, New England will win it. I think Miami is like the San Diego Chargers, the AFC West. They are a typically average football team. The Bills, I really don't think that they're that good. So the Jets division is not good outside New England, but the AFC is loaded with a lot of talent. They really don't have a chance of making the playoffs, in my opinion.
Especially if they start slow, the snowball effect.
Yeah, it's not there this year. I think the Giants, listen, the Giants division, you got Dallas, who you don't know what you're going to get. They could be a very good football team. Or
they got three starters suspended for the first few games on their defense. So where are they going to stop?
I don't know. And what about Washington? Washington's a good team.
I think they could be the competition for the G-Man. I agree with you.
No. And the Eagles, they stink. Period. I just don't like that team. You look at that roster, there's not a lot to get excited about. I think new coach, transitional year. You know, you got Bradford in there, knows he's only there for a year. I think the Giants will have tough games with Dallas and Washington. The Eagles are bad. But the Giants, at the end of the day, if things break right, they can absolutely win that division and make the playoffs. I don't think they're as good as some of the teams in the NFC, you know, on paper, like Arizona and Green Bay. And I think the Panthers are better than them. But the Giants are a team that, you know, with a couple of right breaks and some health, you know, they certainly can get in the playoffs. And you never know what can happen in the playoffs.
I agree. So I want to switch subjects. I'm reading about your boy Turk, okay?
I got 3 minutes to a break, so let's go. Okay. Last point.
He drills Vladimir Guerrero in 2001.
Yes.
And he says one way to get him out is pitching inside. If he can't handle it, he should go back to the Dominican and find another line of work. He's a piece of work. Huh?
That's great. Well, that's Turk. That when you hear Turk in a couple of minutes, the guy says it as he sees it. It's a great straight up. Even if you remember, Turk was talking about going to Yankee Stadium for the 2000 World Series. And you know what his quote there was? Because I don't give a hoot about it. Because we've played there before. It won't be a surprise. The Yankees have tortured us for years and years. And being there would be sweet for me. And then the Yankees started chastising him after. Good for Turk. Turk's got a lot of guts. He went out there, gave it his all. He fought against steroids. He went out, supports our army and all the servicemen around the world. A great guy, says it as it is. And hopefully he'll give us some good quotes in a couple of minutes.
And maybe your next Sunday you're on, I'll come on, we'll talk about politics.
No, you're in the wrong show. Listen, I got to take a break. We'll be back, talk a little bit more sports, and we'll talk to Turk in a few minutes. Thanks for calling in, Dan.
Bye. to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gustbuster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit Gustbuster.com and get your Gustbuster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
Hey, everybody. Back to the Paul Spiteri Show. Again, if you want to call in, 631-8888. Sorry, 631-888-8811. There's a lot of eights in there. Five eights and two ones. Listen, before we get to Turk in a couple of minutes, I think Ryan's getting him on the line. I want to talk a bit about basketball before we move on. Knicks and, well, listen, let's talk about the Nets first. There's really not much to talk about with the Nets. Jeremy Lin, Brooke Lopez, and a coach no one ever heard of. I can't imagine his team is going to excite anybody, right? But, they will beat the Knicks three times because they always do, right? The Knicks could be on fire. The Nets come in, bunch of no-names, and they always beat the Knicks. But at the end of the day in Brooklyn, I'm sure if you want to take your kids to see a cheap game, you could probably sit 20 rows off the court because there's not going to be a lot of people watching the Jeremy Lin Brooke Lopez show over in Brooklyn. So let's talk about the Knicks. Listen, certainly a better team than they were at the end of last year, right? They're a better team on paper, but. And I don't always want to be contrarian, and I'd love to see the Knicks do well. Right? I go back as a kid watching Bernard King and watching, you know, Ewing, and you know, actually watching with my sons the other night, trying to show them Charles Oakley and the bad Knicks, and, you know, there was no three splashing except for Starks, and if he wasn't shooting four for 91 game. But really, listen, you want the Knicks to be exciting. This city loves good basketball. We haven't really had it. Listen to what I think of the new roster, right? It's a thin roster, right? They are not deep, and they have a bunch of guys that could hurt a lot. So there's major injury risk here, right? And one day, I'm telling this now, guys, July 10th, would it shock anyone in this city if the durable Courtney Lee leads a team in scoring on most nights in February? Because Joakim Noah is out with some kind of mystery ailment, or his shoulder hurts, or Rose has hurt his foot, or he has some kind of eye problem. And on the floor is Courtney Lee, Kyle O'Quinn, and a couple of Europeans whose names I can't even pronounce, right? But let's talk about the good things that could happen, right? Starting five on paper. Rose is a great basketball player. I like Derrick Rose. He was MVP of the league. A lot of talent. He's exciting. Knicks haven't had a great point guard. Heck, in my lifetime, you know, I go back and think about the great Knick point guards, and I was happy with Derek Harper, and I was happy with Rory Sparrow, for goodness sake, back then. But the last year, the guards flat out stunk. Calderon was awful. I couldn't stand watching the guy. He should be playing for Real Madrid, not for the Knicks. So if Rose is bad, he's a one-year rental. We move on. Listen, maybe Phil Jackson brings Westbrook in here. One could dream, right? I don't love this quick fix feel, though. I feel that outside of Porzingis, there are no foundational young pieces. Listen, I like Carmelo Anthony. He could score the basketball. Seems like he's matured, but he has a lot of miles on him. You worry about his durability, but he's still Carmelo Anthony. Joakim Noah is a guy I think New York's going to love. He's tough. He plays defense. He's emotional. Fans gonna love him some nights, but then you watch this guy shoot. He's not a scorer, so I show people aren't looking for 17 points a game from this guy. He's, you know, like a Robin Lopez. I mean, maybe a little bit, you know, more refined as a passer in the post, but he's not going to light up the scoreboard. He gets hurt a lot as well, but when he's in there, he'll hustle, play great defense. But I want to see him play a lot of games first. KP's the future of the team, right? I think Porzingis has got a heck of a lot of talent. He's a fun guy. He's a type of guy that's going to, the city's going to love him with his personality. I think he needs his NBA legs, right? And once he gets that NBA endurance and that toughness you need to survive 82 games in this league, we have a perennial all-star. You know, I think he could be a Dirk Nowitzki type. I won't ever say he'd be Dirk Nowitzki, because if he was Dirk Nowitzki, we'd all be very happy here in New York. And then when you look at the bench, I think the bench is bad. I mean, listen, Lance Thomas, I'm glad he's back. He could play. Brandon Jennings, you know, it's funny. Listen to this guy talk, and I could see he's going to be a lot of fun here in New York. He's going to probably put his foot in his mouth, you know, hopefully less than he puts the ball in the net. But I think he could be okay, but he's no guarantee. Another guy with a lot of injury problems. So, again, it all looks good, but there's a lot of risk. And, you know, you look at Hornacek. I mean, listen, some nights I think he should go out there and probably shoot threes for them, because I saw that Phil Jackson talking about bringing Vucicek back or whatever his name is. And I have a funny feeling I'd rather see Hornacek shoot the basketball than hit Sasha come back for another night. But listen, it's a wait-and-see team. I think the East has some powerhouses. Obviously, you got Cleveland, Boston, Toronto is a very good basketball team. The Knicks, listen, if everything falls well, this could be a 4-6 seed team. Right, but I don't think they're better than Cleveland, Boston, and Toronto at all. But with health and some guys emerging, you know, maybe some of these guys they bring over from Europe can play, and you know they're a little bit better than even the Knicks thought. Then maybe we're a fourth, fifth seed team. Which, listen, the way it's been the last couple of years, we'll take. So we'll see how the Knicks go. We'll talk a bit more about that. But on the phone, we have Mr. Turk Wendell. Turk, are you there?
I am. I thought we were going to talk baseball, and this is basketball.
Well, listen, I was saving the best for, you know, when Mr. Wendell comes on, you know, and a guy with, you know, 36 wins in his career. I figured I'd wait for you, Turk.
Yeah, 36 wins. How about that?
So listen, just tell the audience, so I met Turk at Mets Fantasy Camp back in 2012, and Turk was really a great guy to wannabes like me, guys with big guts flowing over their uniforms, and Turk pretty much letting you know how bad you were and how your dreams were shattered at a young age trying to make the big leagues. But Turk and I've kept in touch, and Turk, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it. Tell us a bit about what you're up to these days.
I got a little ranch out in Colorado. I just kind of mostly do that, hunt and fish, and coach my son. He's now 16. I've been coaching him since he's been about 7 or 8 years old.
Wow. So it's just it's a little ranch. Isn't it like 100 acres?
a little over 200.
200. What are you hunting on the ranch? Like, what do you get on the ranch these days?
No, right now, really nothing. Just raised pheasants, quail, chucker, and turkeys. I've got some ponds for fishing trout and some bass and stuff like that. A little slice of paradise, but I'm getting ready to sell it and move to God's country in Iowa.
Iowa? Well, going from the mountains to Iowa. What's in Iowa? Just going to start over there?
Very much in Iowa, and that's the way I like it.
So let's talk.
Too many people in Colorado.
Yeah.
Too many people.
Yeah, well, listen, yeah, you're pretty
Iowa's
removed.
Iowa's nice and laid back, and pace of life is slow. It's just nice. People are real nice.
That's cool. So, Turk, talking a bit about your career, right? I mean, obviously, you were a fan favorite here. You pitched with the, you know, started out with the Cubs. Actually, you got drafted by the Braves, pitched with the Cubs and the Mets, the Phillies, and the, you know, the Rockies there at the end. You know, obviously, you're known for, you know, some of the superstitions and the things that you did on the field. Did the players ever really bust your chops about that stuff?
Oh, all the time. Jamie, I still bust my balls about it.
Which of your, is it the licorice? Was it the shark tooth necklace? What was the biggest thing they busted your chops about?
Probably brushed my teeth and got innings.
Yeah, for those who don't know, turkeys, you brush your teeth. Was it between innings when you were pitching?
Yeah, you know, truth be known, I did that to them. And I only did it that since the big one. When I got to the big leagues to stay in 2005, I never did it again.
So actually, it brings me to my next question. So when you were in the minors, right, before making it with the Cubs, did you ever have a feeling that you were not going to make it to the majors? Like, and then what happened in your career in the minors that you said, you know what, I'm going to make it?
Well, I never doubted myself. Even when I had a stress fracture in my elbow in 92 and ended up only pitching four games and missing the rest of the season, I just never doubted myself. I always had faith, and a strong faith, and a will to, you know, somewhat survive, if you want to say. But I guess one of the more, I don't know what the word would be, dejected part was when I got traded from the Braves to the Cubs. Because I just had a really, really good minor league season. And then I looked back on it, and they traded me and Yorkis Perez to the Cubs for Damon Berrio and Mike Bielacki. And then they released Yorkis Perez 2 days later. So in essence, they got me for two big leaguers.
I looked at
the big picture thinking, well, heck, I'm going to get a chance to play in the big leagues anyway. It's, you know, two for one and two big leaguers for a triple-A guy. I figured I really had to suck it up and sink it up not to get at least a chance to play in the big leagues.
Yeah. So, Kirk, when you get to the big leagues, right, what's your, like, oh, God, I'm in the big leagues moment? Like, when – tell me about, was it the first time you pitched in the big leagues? Was it when you got to the – you know, when you got there the first – what was, like, the oh, my God, I'm in the big leagues moment?
I think one of the coolest things was walking into the clubhouse, approaching my locker, and seeing my jersey hanging there.
Yeah, it's kind of big.
Probably one of the coolest moments for me.
And – let's talk about your Cubs years, right? Your 5 years with the Cubs. Who are some of your favorite teammates?
Terry Adams, Kent Bottenfield, Larry Cassian, most of the guys in the bullpen. Steve Schatzel. Most of these guys I still stay in touch with.
Yeah, and what players did you not like playing there? Anybody that you're like, ugh, I really don't like playing with this guy?
Jimmy Sosa was probably one of the worst teammates ever.
Who was that?
Sosa.
Oh, Sammy, really? Why was that?
Well, he's just a selfish player. We'd lose the game 14-1 if he hit a home run. He was happy. You know, it's just not how you. You know, it's just not a good teammate in my eyes.
And so let's go over Yeah. Well, obviously, were you shocked when it came out with him and the steroids?
No, not at all. No.
Kind of could see for where he was going. So let's move over to your time with the Mets, right? 2000. Turk, listen, when you look at that roster that you had in 2000, you know, I was a big Bobby Valentine fan. I'd like to hear what you have to say about him in a second. But that roster did not have a lot of stars, right? Beside Piazza, I don't know if you call Al Leiter a star or not, but there was not a lot of star power on that roster. What made that team so special to go as far as it did?
Well, I think it was just a bunch of really, you know, kind of blue-collar, hard-nosed players that, you know, if you look at as opposed to maybe the Yankees, it's hard to, I don't know if you can say the word egos, but it's hard to really balance and make 25 superstars happy. And none of us cared who got credit for the win or who was the hero of the game as long as we won the game.
That's
so it was such a great team effort, and we just all came together. And I wasn't a big fan of the wild card, but I think the wild card has been really great for baseball. And that just makes the teams that are playing hot toward the end of the season, you know, makes them even harder to beat. And that's kind of what we did. We peaked at the right time. And, you know, I'd love to see the Cubs get to the World Series and win a World Series for once. And they're playing great baseball, but I just hope they can do it when it counts, you know, come October. And it'll be a really huge workout for all the Cubs fans out there that are great fans.
Yeah, that would
they
be.
Can't hold here and,
it would be pretty wild. So you liked playing for Bobby Valentine, if I recall.
I loved playing for Bobby. He was awesome. He's a great motivator. He's a great communicator to his players. But on the other side, too, if you were kind of a slacker and he didn't think you were giving your all, well, you knew it too, and you knew what you stood with him, that's for sure.
Which is always refreshing. When you look back at your Met career, what player did you play with that you think could have been a heck of a lot better than they really turned out?
Well, one of my good buddies, Rick Reed, he got a lot of flack for being a replacement player, but he had a great career, but he never got the accolades that he should have, I think. I mean, he was fortunate that he made his All-Star team in 98. But he was kind of, everyone compared him to Greg Maddux. He was like the poor man's Greg Maddux.
Yeah. Oh, I love. I thought Rick Reed was great to watch. He was durable. He threw, and he threw strikes, right, Turk? He always threw the ball over the plate.
And if you took the time to get to know him, just an unbelievably great guy, a great husband, a great dad. But you know, the guys on the team, for them, our team, for the most part, you know, everybody was past all that stuff.
Yeah, and. So tell me a bit about managers. Who was your favorite manager you played for?
I really love Larry Johnson and Jim Rivelman with the Cubs.
And which,
I think they were probably my two favorite managers.
And which manager couldn't you stand playing for?
Jim LaFever.
Jim LaFever.
He was my very first manager with the Cubs. And, you know, my debut, I didn't pitch that great, but I didn't pitch that awful either. He called me in the office the next day and told me I sucked at the business being in the big leagues. And here's something I just worked my entire life for. And to hear that, and you know, he said, if I have my way, you're asking AAA tomorrow. The only way you'll go pitch on Tuesday in Pittsburgh is if Parker goes on the DL, and then you pitch Tuesday in Pittsburgh, and I'd get your ass out there and shag. And I'm telling you, I mean, you know, you work your whole life for something, and
That's what you hear.
Go how you want to. Yeah, being there the next day, it's a huge letdown. And at least, you know, at that point, I wanted to go back to AAA because I knew the team counted on me and depended on me every 5 days and had the confidence in me, too. And that's what it really boils down to, a lot of those guys. There's so many guys in AAA that can play the game and play it at the big league level, but just don't get a really a fair opportunity, a fair chance to prove themselves. And at the end of the 96 season, Riggleman called me in the office and thanked me for having such a great season, doing everything he asked. And I said, thank me, I thank you for giving me the chance to prove that I belong in the big league, that I can, that, you know, I'm a big leaguer. And you're the only person that's given me that chance.
So you pitched 70.
If I go home this morning and never get to play baseball again, but I belong in the big leagues.
And in 96, you pitched in 70 games, 18 saves, 79 innings. Right? That was by the only time you pitched. Well, you actually had with the Mets appearances 80 in 99 and 77 in 2000 and 70 in 2001. And you started out as a starter. You pitched six. You started, what, six games in your big league career? Then they moved you to the bullpen in 95 in Chicago.
Well, yeah. I don't know if I had any. 93, 94, I didn't know I was going to be one day the next. I was in the big leagues or in AAA. Yeah, and actually in 97, I went to spring training, and I was a starter the whole spring training. And the last day of spring training, Riggleman took me aside and said, hey, I just love having you in the bullpen. But if something happens, then you're the first person that's going to be in the rotation. That was just lip service, and his hands are kind of tied. And that's, to me, one of the – I just had a conversation with one of the dads on my son's team over the weekend about this. You know, I mean, you're in the big league, you're a man. You should be able to be man enough to hear the truth. But a lot of times they just tell you lip service to diffuse whatever situation may be at hand. Instead of just telling me, hey, you know what, it's the numbers game. This is the guy that's, you know, you're the odd man out. Go to AAA or whatever it is. Go to the bullpen. And, you know, they just don't want to hurt people's feelings or whatnot. And I'm just a, as you all know, I'm just a, hey, it is what it is. And take it like a man.
Hey, how much does it affect the ball club? If I mean, you talked about one of the managers you didn't like, right? If you was it universal that no one liked LaFever?
I don't know, because I was up and down so much that time that season. I mean, I was in the big leagues for a couple weeks in June and then back in the month of September. But he was on, you know, in respect to him, he was on the hot seat too, and, you know, on the verge of getting fired, and he ended up getting fired at the end of the 93 season as well, so. You know, he might have been under pressure as far as that goes. But my real life is you just treat people how you want to be treated. And that's no way to treat somebody, especially somebody that you know, they just got to the big leagues. And,
yeah.
You know, he didn't like my superstitions or routine that I did. And, you know, the fact that I didn't win, you know, I always, it's kind of funny, but I tell people all the time, as soon as you start doing bad and the team start doing bad, everybody points the finger. Nobody wants to take accountability. They want to say it's so-and-so's fault. You end up seeing fights with guys on the teams in the dugouts or the clubhouse. And, you know, I say, when you're winning, you can do whatever the heck you want. I mean, you still take a crap on the mound and no one cares. Everyone's going to laugh.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's certainly, you know, when you look at the ball players today, I think they would learn a lot from your approach. And you know, speaking of which, I look back, you know, some of the things over your career, you know, one of my callers talked about this, about the Vladimir Guerrero situation. Did you ever actually have words with Guerrero personally about what you said in terms of him getting out of the way of pitching inside?
Well, it boiled down to, you know, I just don't like guys showboating. I don't like, you know, standing at home plate when you hit a home run. And I can see being excited if it's a game winner, walk-off home run, playoff, something. I get that. But when you're in a 10-0 game and you hit a ball a country mile and, you know, it's a home run and you think it's a home run, you're standing at home plate pimping it, and then the ball gets caught and it's 10-0 and you just swung at a 3-0 pitch, yeah, you're going to hear it. And I told him flat out, I'm going to drill you the next time I chase you. And it was the very next day, first batter, and I drilled him right square in the back on the first pitch.
Did he charge?
No, I told him he had two choices. Either get his ass out here and fight or get his ass to first base. Put his head down and land to first base.
And then the other thing, when you talked about Rick Ankiel, when you got thrown out for throwing behind the batter, threw behind the Cardinals manager, Matheny. You said Rick Ankiel does that all the time. It never gets thrown out. Did Ankiel talk to you about that?
No, and, you know, I mean, it was nothing against Ankiel. I don't know him as a person. I actually felt real bad for him as a player, as a pitcher, you know.
Yeah, it was tough to watch.
He just got these functions into a strike, but, you know, that was just my way of defending myself. Let's just say got away.
All right, Doug, listen, so I want to close off. Again, thanks for coming on. A couple of rapid-fire questions for you. Best town to travel for food and nightlife when you played in the big leagues? Go.
I didn't do any nightlife in the big leagues.
Oh, sure. You were the one reading the Bible in the hotel, I'm sure.
I like New York. The food's great there. Chicago and New York probably my two favorites.
How about the worst town? Where'd you dread going?
Worst town. I didn't really like Miami.
You didn't lie? Okay, I could see Miami not being your type of town. Toughest batter you ever faced?
Yeah, all of them.
Well, let's see. When I look at those stats, 3.93 RA. Yeah, that might answer. Any batter that you knew that you could get out?
I had trouble with Chipper Jones for a while, and then I said he was too comfortable. We needed it. Make sure he wasn't comfortable in the box, and I don't think he ever got another hit off me after that.
Player you disliked the most, whether teammate or opponent? Anyone come to your head?
I hated playing against Craig Biggio, but he's definitely the guy you want on your team. He's just a scrapper, a gamer, that guy that would do whatever he could to beat your ass. And guys that I played with, after playing against where I got traded to the teams and stuff, to me that was the ultimate compliment. I had numerous guys come up to me and say, man, I freaking hated you. I couldn't stand you. But I'm so glad you're on my team now.
Craig Biggio from here in Long Island, by the way. He's a Hall of Famer from not too far here from the studio. And tell me about, let's talk a little modern baseball, right? Who's the best pitcher you're seeing this today, Turk?
I just absolutely love watching Kershaw pitch. I love the pace he is. They throw strikes. He's a competitor. Him and Bumgarner are just unbelievable. You know, you see some of these guys, and I'm a Red Sox fan, and I watch all the Red Sox games. It just kills me that you got a guy like Joe Kelly and Buchholz. With the stuff they have, it baffles me that they're not more successful than they are.
Yeah, but those guys, I mean, but I can't, Buchholz isn't, I mean, his numbers are just consistently bad. Well, I mean, you think
of
that?
Yeah, it's just like I said. It's just it kind of baffles me. I don't understand with the stuff that they have. And Joe Kelly, heck, he throws upper 90s. I was telling one of the dads yesterday, a guy like that with his stuff, a bad game for him should be giving up 4 or 5 hits.
Well, it's even too. They talk about Eovaldi here for the Yankees, right? He throws in the upper 90s consistently. I mean, and this guy just can't win baseball games. And so let me ask you a question. What do you think? I mean, it's funny. I was watching Yankees White Sox the other night. Carlos Rodon, right, who's a guy who's been touted, high pick, right?
And
you're watching this guy pitch, and Carlos Rodon from the White Sox, and he's throwing nothing but. What was that?
I'm very familiar with him. I'm actually good buddies with the gal he's dating, her dad.
All right, good. So then you know what I'm talking about. So I'm watching him pitch, and it's fastball, curveball, nothing but fastball, curveball, and not even trying to spot a pitch. This kid's just slinging it over the plate. Every pitch is straight down the middle. He's, like, not even trying to pitch. Like, what is it with some of these guys? I mean, they have all the talent in the world. Like, tell me, what's in their head? Are they not listening to the pitching coach and they're not trying to be more of a pitcher? Like, what is it that these guys can't take this kind of stuff and be stars?
Well, I think some of the guys, and Rendon and Carlos, who I've personally never met, and I've heard lots of stuff about them, too, maybe future father-in-law. But he got to the big leagues relatively quick.
Yeah, he did.
A lot of these guys don't spend enough time in the minor leagues doing the daily grind and learning how to pitch. Some of them are just throwers. And you know, getting back to the Red Sox with Buckholz and Kelly, I mean, I don't know, maybe sometimes they're just afraid to get hit. And, you know, getting off on a different topic, you look at the way baseball is and the way it's changed, I just don't understand. I mean, they talk about speeding the game up all the time. It's all you ever hear about, speeding up, putting damn shot clocks or pitch clocks every 12 seconds or something in the minor leagues. If the umpires would call a strike in the rule book, a strike from your armpits to your kneecaps, guys will swing the bat, and the game will speed up, I promise you.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it'd be interesting. So, you know, because it baffles me when you look at it, and it seems, listen, I'm obviously just a fan, and I've watched a lot of baseball, but you just watch, and you're like, why isn't this guy doing something besides just throwing two pitches and literally in the same location? It just blows your mind sometimes as a fan and you watch and you listen. There's so many things that, as you know, as a ball player, goes through guys' heads. You have bad nights. Something could be going on. You have no idea, but you're just like, wow, you had this chance.
Yeah. Well, coaching little kids, I just try to tell them, hey, guys, look, if the guy's on the mound and he tells you what's coming, you're still going to make an out 7 out of 10 times, and that's a mediocre pitcher.
Yeah.
Now, if that guy's a plus-plus pitcher, now you're going to make him out 8 or 9 times out of 10.
Yeah.
So I think we just lose the sight of the fact that even if it's Babe Ruth in the box, he's still going to make an out 7 out of 10 times.
Right. And if you
need to pitch contact.
And if you did that, you'd be very successful. But, Turk, listen, I have to wrap up now. Listen, thank you so much for calling in. It's obviously great to have you. And yeah, maybe we can have you on again, and I really appreciate it.
No problem, man. Thanks a bunch. And, you know, this is just proof that anybody can have a radio show.
Well, listen, I just want to tell the audience, when I told Turk I had a radio show, he said, it's great because you certainly got a face for radio.
That's for sure.
All right, Turk, be good, my man. I'll be talking to you soon.
All right, thanks for warning.
Thanks, bro. Bye. Bye-bye. That was Turk Wendell, a really good guy. Hopefully you guys can hear from listening to Turk. Really down-to-earth, you know, salt-of-the-earth type of guy. You know, obviously interesting stories when you talk to him about his career and about the game. And obviously still loves it and still follows it and is working, you know, obviously with his son. So I'm about to wrap up. I have about 2 minutes left. First, I do want to tell you one more time, for all your transportation needs, call CGA Luxury Transportation. Airports, trips into the city, trips to the wineries, all luxury vehicles at taxicab prices. Call Craig, great guy, reliable, because I've used all my business trips through him. Companies I've worked for, all of our staff is using, very reliable, great guy. You can reach him 516-557-7991. Again, it's CGA Luxury Transportation, 516-557-7991. I want to hope everyone enjoyed the show. I want to thank Brian for working the board. And, of course, Mr. Rob Cole for the help and the opportunity. This Paul Spiteri show will be back on for two more shows, August 7th and 21st. I have some guests that I'm working with. Might be able to bring Jeff Perlman on, who's in a New York Times award-winning author of some great books about the Cowboys, about the Mets. He's writing one about Brett Favre and the USFL. And in August, we'll talk football camps. Football camps will be cooking. Maybe the Jets will have a quarterback with the big beard in camp or not. We'll talk about the baseball playoff hunt. We'll know a little bit more about the health of the New York Metropolitans. I'll do a little fantasy football as the drafts will start heating up in August, and we'll talk about much more. I want to thank everybody for listening to the Paul Spiteri Show. Have a good night, and please look us up at sportstalk1240.com. You can find me on Twitter at Paul Spiteri, WGBB. And please listen to our shows every Sunday from 7 to 9, and thank you all. Bye.
In the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.